Let me start with a reminder of some of the things that we've accomplished here at the university in the last few months. We've just welcomed an outstanding group of new faculty. We successfully recruited 105 faculty this year, and I know there are a lot of people in this room who worked on those recruits. We've closed 92 retention cases over the past year. That compares to 144 in the previous year, so I'm delighted to have fewer retention cases. I hope that number continues to go down this year as well. We successfully retained about 3/4 of those top faculty members, equal to our 10-year average. We are about to launch the fourth round of the UW 2020 Research Funding Initiative. There are now 49 funded projects underway, funded with $16.5 million and involving more than 300 faculty and staff from every one of our colleges and schools. And it's a wonderful way to help jumpstart some research that can really have some great long-run promise. So thanks particularly to WRF for their core funding in that. With our Always Forward campaign, our current fundraising campaign with alums and friends, we have raised $2.2 billion in the last 4 years for faculty research, education, and student access. We've had a record number of alumni and friends participating, and we're well on our way to our $3.2 billion goal. Our retention and graduation rates, as I've reported to you here in past years, are at all-time highs, and we are among top public universities in those statistics. We were just named number 5 in the nation in federal dollars spent on graduate student fellowships, traineeships, and training grants. It's an important sign of our excellence in graduate education, even as we also work to bring our graduate student compensation up to market rates. And again, a thank you to WRF that has substantially helped us increase our graduate student support in the last few years. We all know that graduate students are key for recruiting top faculty as well. This is important. Finally, after a 15-year hiatus, I announced at the end of last month that we're going to be restarting our cluster hiring program this fall. You might have seen the call for proposals that recently went out. We're going to ask for some set of proposals this fall and then go into what's going to be, I hope, our typical call that will happen in late spring. Clusters build on one of our most important strengths, the transdisciplinary work that we do on complex projects. And the idea is to put in proposals that propose hiring 3 new faculty across 3 different areas that add to the faculty that are already here to really build substantial strength in an important area of scientific and intellectual interest that, that we want to be strong in and that we want to expand our abilities in the years ahead. We are hoping to launch 3 to 5 new clusters every year for the next 5 years, and if we do that successfully, we should end up hiring about 50 new faculty. So I'm excited about that new program and hope that you'll all make sure people in your departments know about it, and I want to get a lot more proposals than we can possibly fund, all looking good, and that'll be a reason to go and try to scrape some more money together to fund even more. Both in our fundraising campaign and across the university, we've been focused on 4 primary strategic priorities. First, enhancing the educational experience. That means modernizing class facilities for active learning, strengthening our investment in student services, enhancing out-of-classroom learning, and generally making sure that we stay at the top of educational excellence. Second, improving access for all students. And I've said this to you before, my goal is that every qualified student who we admit can afford to come here, and we're not there yet, but we are getting closer. That means expanding support for low and middle income students with particular emphasis on first generation and historically disadvantaged groups. Right now, we lose top students because we don't offer some of the same scholarships others do. But let me talk about some of the progress that we have made in the last year or two. Through the Always Forward campaign, we have in the last 4 years raised money to fund approximately 1,000 new scholarships for undergraduate and graduate students. That's an amazing step forward in just 4 years. We're putting more of our own institutional dollars into need-based fellowships. 10 years ago, we provided $13 million in need-based grants and scholarships with our funds, that is, outside of state and federal dollars. Last year, we provided $58 million. That's more than quadrupling that number in the last 10 years. And just 2 weeks ago, we launched a new program that I'm very excited about called Badger Promise. It guarantees a year of free tuition for first-generation students who transfer from a two-year UW school or a Wisconsin Technical College under our transfer agreements. I think many of you know that students who go to the two-year schools, if they do take a certain curriculum and have a B average or better, they can automatically come to UW-Madison at the end of their second year when they graduate from the two-year school. A high share of first-generation students, for a whole variety of reasons, start at local two-year schools. And those who fill the requirements for transferring come in, and our transfer students graduate at the same rate as our more typical freshmen. So this program essentially says if you're a first-generation transfer student who comes in from the UW schools, you will get two semesters of free tuition, 1 year. If you are also Pell eligible, you will get 2 years of free tuition. And it's an effort to really reduce the cost of UW-Madison and say to some of our lower-income families around the country that you can indeed graduate from UW-Madison with all of the opportunities and career advantages that that degree is going to give you. So student excellence, student access, the third strategic priority we're working on is maintaining and growing faculty excellence. That means hiring well, retaining, paying competitive salaries, and making sure we have the teaching and research environment that keep and attract faculty. The new cluster hiring program is a very important piece of this. But another important piece is our compensation program. As I'll note in a minute, there are no new cross-the-board salary increases coming out of the state budget this year. There will be some next year. So again, we're doing a critical compensation fund aimed at providing salary increases for those who deserve them on the basis of merit or equity. We've increased the funds we're putting into this by 30%, making $3.5 million available for faculty salary increases and $4 million available for staff increases. We're also doubling the fund available for one-time bonuses. Last year, we did this for the first time and put in $2 million. It was highly successful. Those bonuses went disproportionately to some of our lower wage workers, which is exactly where, you know, for special projects, I would like to see them go. And we're going to double our bonus fund to $4 million for a total of $11.5 million in compensation dollars this year. So, again, we've got lots of things we can work on here in terms of faculty excellence, but I hope that we're moving forward. And then fourthly, student excellence, student access, faculty excellence, fourth priority here, expanding and improving our research portfolio. That means all of the things we have to do to keep up with emerging trends, making sure our research facilities work well, supporting interdisciplinary research, providing bridge funding, et cetera, and our cluster hire program is, of course, an important piece of that. This is not a cheap or easy agenda. And as I've said before, when I talk about the need to be entrepreneurial and increase investment funds in this university, it's not about the money. It's about those strategic priorities and what we have to do for our students, graduate students, faculty, and staff in order to maintain the excellence of this university. So let me turn to entrepreneurial strategies. I have given you this list before, but I'm going to repeat it again. Here are the six things that we are trying to work on. Expanding the summer semester, which will both educationally give students a wider variety of educational options, reduce time to degree, but also brings in additional revenues for schools and colleges. Secondly, growing our professional master's programs for non-traditional students. A number of you out there are doing some really exciting master's programs, either in person or online, that expand our educational reach and also expand our revenues. Thirdly, bringing tuition for out-of-state and professional students up to market levels. We've been working on that, and I've gotten permission from the regents to, again, move what I think in 2 years now would put us at the market level for out-of-state tuition. And I remind all of you that whenever we do a tuition increase, we take at least 20% of that money and put it back into financial aid to make sure that we can keep people whole here at the university. Fourthly, exploring student mix and numbers. We've been working on that with professional schools, and I'm going to come back and talk about that more in a minute. Fifthly, building alumni support. That's the Always Forward campaign. I've already mentioned some of our successes there. And lastly, growing research funds with programs like UW 2020 and cluster hires. All of these strategies are on us to execute. We have to be entrepreneurial if we're going to create the investment dollars we need to maintain and grow excellence at this university. And we're seeing the effects. I've just talked about three programs that are possible because of what we've been doing on these strategies. One of them is our Cluster Hire program, one of them is our Badger Promise program, and one of them is the expansion in critical compensation funds. We need to be doing this sort of thing, and in order to do that, we've got to generate the revenue that makes it possible. Let me now come back and talk for a minute about strategy number four, which is exploring student mix and numbers. And I want to start at the right place. I want to start at our commitment to Wisconsin freshmen who come here within this state. Our admit rate this year for Wisconsin students, Wisconsin applicants, was 71%. That's as high as admit rate as you see in almost any flagship university, higher than many for their in-state students. We guarantee we will have a minimum of 3,600 Wisconsin students in every freshman class. That is above our 10-year average, and as demographics in this state change so that there are smaller and smaller numbers of high school graduates, it's an increasing share of the high school classes that we are bringing into UW-Madison. This year, we don't have 3,600, we actually have over 3,700 because of the acceptance rates that came down the line. Thirdly, the Badger Promise program is particularly designed to bring in first-generation students and transfer students who, for whatever set of reasons, can't start at a four-year school, but have the capability and the intellectual interest to move on to a four-year degree here at UW-Madison. And fourthly, we're also expanding, it's a slightly different thing, a high-touch program aimed at persuading the really top test score students out of Wisconsin high schools to consider UW-Madison. Some of them do, some of them don't. I'm not going to ask a show of hands as to how many of you had children who didn't come to UW-Madison. It's sometimes a little hard in Madison to keep people here, I know that. But we're really trying to focus on high-touch recruiting for a group that we really want to see stay in this state, get their college degree here, makes it much more likely they're going to work here and be here for their careers. So we're working on a whole variety of fronts to really make a commitment to the state of Wisconsin, and I feel strongly that we have made as much of a commitment as any flagship I know, and more than many. Given that, we now have another opportunity. Over the last 5 to 10 years, our applications have, among out-of-state students, and I'm not talking about international, it's really other U.S. domestic, have increased by more than 70% over the last decade. Furthermore, over the last several years, that increase has gone along with no diminution in the quality of applicants. In other words, we've done what every school wants to do. We've increased our applicant pool and actually, in no way at all, decreased the quality of that pool. This year, we rejected 1,300 high-caliber out-of-state students, this does not include international students, whose academic quality was comparable to that of our admitted students, all right? That is a golden opportunity for us to do some class expansions building on that very deep pool of applicants whose quality is as good as anyone already coming. So we're going to begin to explore expanding the freshman class by between 200 and 250 students a year for the next 4 years. We'll be talking about this more in the coming months. We've talked to the deans about it. We've talked to the department chairs about it. We absolutely know that we need to invest in a number of places around this university so that we can admit more students and in no way lower quality. So for instance, there's already hiring that will be going on in LNS this year that's aimed at hiring in departments that are going to see some of the effects of an increase in class size. We want to be in front of this, not behind it. The reason to do this, and I might say, every one of our peer schools, not some of them, every one of our peer schools over the last decade has increased their class size between 1,000 to 5,000, depending on which school you're looking at. So we're the only ones who didn't do it. And we didn't do it because we had this deal with the Board of Regents that said for every one out-of-state student we admitted, we had to admit three in-state students. And given the demographics of the state, first of all, that wasn't very possible because in-state students were falling. And secondly, we lost money every time we did it, so there's very little reason to do that. We now are in a different world. We've got a different agreement with the Regents. We made very strong commitments to the state, and we can now do some expansions in our freshman class, funding as necessary to make sure we maintain quality. And you know, this is one we're going to be working very closely with departments, with the deans, with the people who are going to be affected by this. So I'm excited about it, and I will say, if we want to keep going on the compensation front, on supporting graduate students, on looking at cluster hires, on providing student access and student excellence, on redesigning some additional classrooms, these are the sorts of investments we have to be making. They're necessary to generate the sort of revenues that all of our peer schools have been generating to do this type of work. So let me turn from this to the state budget. I haven't talked about the state budget as a source of new revenue. It, you know, the reality is that a good budget is one that has no cuts in it, right? And this is a budget with no cuts. 20 years ago, that would have been a bad thing to say. These days, compared to where we've been in the last six budgets, it's a really good thing to say. This is a budget with no cuts. It even has a little bit of new money in it. Not a lot, but some that will come to us, and that's good too. But we can't count particularly on new money from the state budget in future years. What we need to do with the state budget is make sure we don't get cut more. All of that said, there's some other things in this budget. There is no pay increase in 2017-18. I'm sorry about that, but there are two pay increases coming down the line in 2018-19, and you should bring this back to your department so you're sure they know this. One 2% increase will occur on July 1st, 2018, and a second 2% increase will occur on January 1st, 2019. So next year, there's a little cumulative effect here, we're gonna have a little bit more than a 4% pay increase funded across the university, and that's going to be really good for all sorts of reasons. You can give them better than I can. Furthermore, the capital budget in this state budget restores maintenance funding. It includes funds for a critical utilities repair project out on Bascom Hill, and it builds the Lot 62 parking ramp, which is necessary for future expansions in the School of Veterinary Medicine. Now, as always, there's some things in the budget that I'm not happy about. I think that's probably true in every state budget with every chancellor. A provision changing the qualifications for chancellors of UW institutions was added to the budget. That change prohibits UW system schools from adopting any policy or rules that would require the Board of Regents to consider only individuals who are eligible for tenure when filling chancellor or vice chancellor positions. The Milwaukee Chancellor, Mark Monet, and I wrote a letter to the governor setting out all the ways in which this would weaken UW schools and particularly research institutions and encouraging him to veto that provision, but we were unsuccessful in that. As you know, and we're going to talk about later, the Board of Regents has also proposed some changes to the selection of chancellors that I find deeply problematic, that greatly reduce the voice of the campus in the selection of chancellors, and I will let Anya say more about that later. There are also provisions in the budget around performance funding that are going to take a little bit to meet, and there's some provisions around workload reporting that particularly focus on reporting teaching hours. And the result of this is that we're going to do workload reporting, not teaching reporting, workload reporting across campus. So when people ask us, what are your faculty doing? We're not just going to say, well, they teach so many hours, that's silly. You all do far more than in-classroom teaching, right, which is what this asks for. I want to talk about how you interact with students, how you do research, what time you spend on administration and professional service, and be able to give a full picture of the workload and the activities of our faculty. So you will be hearing more about that as well. Let me turn from the state budget to the federal budget. As you might know, the president proposed large cuts to federal agencies. We have been working both with the Wisconsin delegation and through some of our national peer organizations to try to reduce the effect of those cuts, and I'm very pleased that at least the initial indications, particularly around things like NIH funding, is that Congress is probably not willing to go along with a lot of those proposals. I won't say more about that, but would be happy to talk to anyone after the meeting who wants to discuss it. Let me close by quickly touching on two other issues that I think are highly important on our campus. The first is sustainability, and I know we've got a resolution on this coming up, and I'm happy that we're going to be talking about this. We always have to be looking for ways to run our institution better, and sustainability is one of the issues that's important there. All of you in your book on pages 11 and 12 have a two-pager that we've put together on what is it that we're doing at this university over the last several years around sustainability. I hope you'll look at it. You can pick this up online, get it to your faculty and those who are interested. There are three ways in which we work on sustainability. Our first, and I think our most important, is probably education. We have a huge growth in the number of students who are enrolling in programs relating to environment and sustainability. And training people are going to be out there in the future working on this is really important. We have 172 courses right now cross-listed with environmental studies. Secondly, in addition to education, is research. And many of you work on issues related to sustainability. We have more than 250 current projects funded with approximately $360 million that in some form or another address sustainability and environmental issues. In fact, our largest federal grant over at the Energy Institute is all about developing sustainable agricultural crops for biofuels. And thirdly, it's not just what we do with our students and with our research, it's what we do on campus with our buildings. The campus master plan has paid a lot of attention to this, and we have always had more progress to make on this, but I'm also impressed with what this campus has done. We've invested $63 million in energy conservation projects over the last decade and reduced our energy footprint by 27% per square foot. A number of campus buildings have renewable energy systems now, such as solar hot water, or others such as Union South are designed to maximize daylight to reduce electricity use. We're retrofitting older buildings with more efficient HVAC systems, better insulation, better lighting, occupancy sensors, those sorts of things. This work does cost money, and the much reduced budget for buildings and maintenance over the last 4 years has slowed down these efforts. We did a lot more in the first 6 years of this last decade than the last four, but we have a 10-phase set of projects in hand that we need to make progress on, and I know you're going to talk about some of that. We've got great leadership. The Office of Sustainability, led by Professor Kathy Middlecamp on the faculty side, and then on the staff side, someone from our facilities group. We're in the midst of hiring a new person for that job. Our person who was in it left, have been very important to all of these efforts. So this is one that I take very seriously. I know that you take seriously. We'll come back to it on the agenda. Finally, let me close with a few words on campus climate. All right. You can't have been around this country for the last 6 months without really engaging, and particularly if you're on a campus, in the national conversation around racial injustice, around the way in which this country does or doesn't welcome those of other ethnicities or nationalities, or about our immigration policies. Everyone here watched what happened in Charlottesville and in some other communities around this country, and we on this campus have so far been fortunate that we have not been targeted by hate groups, but doesn't mean it won't happen. Here at UW, it has been relatively well documented that a group using the name Ku Klux Klan existed on this campus in the 1920s. There are actually two groups that use that name. I've created an ad hoc study group to advise on how we can best acknowledge and respond to that history. Professor Stephen Kantrowitz, a history professor and an expert in white supremacist movements, and Dr. Floyd Rose, a longtime community leader, are co-chairing that committee. It isn't easy to have conversations about racism or about ethnicity on a disproportionately white campus in a disproportionately white community and state. But those are conversations we have to have if we're going to compete effectively for the best students and the best faculty in the century coming up. Last year, I asked all of your units to engage in some way in training that focused on inclusivity and diversity, and I've asked department chairs, and I will ask you as well to work with your department chairs to say, okay, what did you do last year? What did it open up, and what's the next step? What do you need to do this year to continue those conversations, to continue that exploration? I'm also asking every school and college to work on a strategic plan to promote diversity inside their units. Some have already done this, and I've done a real call out to the School of Education, which did an excellent job on putting together a school-wide diversity plan, and I want other schools to engage in that as well. We will be releasing next month the results of the campus climate survey with recommendations of what that says. It's our first survey on those issues to come out. We have just finished our expanded Our Wisconsin program, which is a program with freshmen, getting them to engage in conversations about where do I come from and how does the community I grew up in shape the lenses that I look at the world with, and how do I live and work and thrive in a community where there are a lot of people with very different past experiences who come with very different lenses on the world. We piloted this program last year, got very good evaluations, and have rolled it out to all freshmen this year. We've just launched a new diversity liaison program to engage interested faculty and staff in developing and leading workshops on diversity for their peers. and I hope that some of you and some of your colleagues will be participating in that. And we are again funding our Faculty Diversity Initiative that provides some support from central funds for hiring faculty that are targets of opportunity. When we asked students of color what we could do to make this a more welcoming campus, the most common answer was hire more diverse faculty and staff. So as I say, there's a lot more to be done on that front. I don't know what's going to happen on campus around these issues. It will be lively, as it should be. It's lively at the national level. That will be reflected in our conversation here. But I hope that we can have a good, and I might note, a civil conversation around differences of opinion and differences of issues engaging with all of these questions of immigration and diversity. We have been through a period of challenges in recent years, but we are now in a position to make some investments, and I very much hope we can continue those investments in the years ahead. As we move into a new academic year, I want you not only to think about the challenges, which I know you see every day, but I also want to let you see the good things happening on campus, things that you don't read about in the media because it's no fun to cover the good things. Students who walk into a class and discover a lifetime passion. Faculty whose research project transforms what we know about a critical topic. And work that we do across the state that helps this state thrive. We're privileged to be in a position that impacts the world, this state, this region, in so many positive ways. So I want to thank all of you for the commitment you've made to this place. I'm always honored to work here. And with that, I will close.